Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the brakes when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Have to start off with an apology to Kilkenny Club, Roar Innes Tiog, because I really did a hatchet job on their club last Monday, and I didn't get away with it. Let's just say I've been pulled up on this. We know I have a weakness for mispronouncing club names. Usually people let it slide, but this was Eddie Kerr's club. So, like, I mean, this was like, what kind of idiot are you? And not only am I being called an idiot, is like, why don't you get someone that knows anything about hurling onto the show? Like, people are really taking this to heart that I got this wrong. In my defence, I'd actually never heard the name of that club before. I don't know why, and I'd have a keen interest in Kilkenny hurling. They've only ever won one county title. That was 1968. I wasn't born. They lost two finals in 76 and 77. Look, I was born in 1978, lads. Look, I have an excuse for all of this kind of stuff. Now, they did win an intermediate All-Ireland in 2014. I don't know where I was asleep that year or whatever. So anyways, Roar Innes Tiog, there you go. There's my apology. Thanks to Mary Ling, who was very polite, the way she pulled me up with my mistake, unlike others who, let's just say, were not as polite. Great, we can move on now. We have to get on to Skerries, Conan, because this is a big controversy. You couldn't just end the year after making a county quarter final, you know, going down with a fight against with a good fight against St Jude's, you know, draw a line in the sand. What a great year for the club with the senior footballers. Ye have to go into a TikTok scandal, and now the club is shut down, Conan. Look, you're going to have to take it up from here.
I have to say, Willie, it was more fun when we were talking about your mistakes. that was a bit of a mess. Like, everybody, well, most people's probably seen the video by now. Like, but yeah, obviously, like, a few of the girls and someone play on the ladies team, they contracted the virus. They didn't know at that stage. They had all tested, or they had all gotten tests, and then they were on TikTok then just guessing who would now be positive because of what they had done in whatever night they were talking about. And like, that went to the length of, like, I think she's going to get it because she was licking her face and there was a picture of it, and it was like, oh, just not a good look for Skerries and how everybody sees it. But then, like, you have to say, like, that was really stupid. There's no excuse for it. And look, they were told as well, like, and they've had it really apologized. The whole club shut down. The soccer team out here as well shut down. You know, it had knock-on effects for families and like, working life as well. So, like, you know, it's very embarrassing for them. But I think the reaction then has just been mad, because it's just been thousands and thousands of people just now lining up looking to abuse them, basically, and there's just no end to it. And I don't get what the point of it is. It's like, if if you want them to know how stupid they were and how bad this is, then they already know. Like, you don't need some random person now from down the country just basically calling them every name under the sun. So there's definitely a fine line there, and they're getting their all deals still.
Yeah, but like, let's make a case for the defence, right? So without this TikTok video, the club would be shut down, right? That was going to happen anyways.
Yeah, like definitely, because like there was
somebody tested positive and they're close contacts. Now it looks like they socialise together. They're bloody young enough girls, right? Whether they're teenagers or a little bit older, they're young girls. They met up at the weekend. One of them ended up testing positive. The rest of them were close contacts, and they speculated about which of them could have got it. Right? Look, let's be honest, lads. If someone in our office got the coronavirus and they tested positive, and they came back into the office, told everyone tested positive, would we not be ringing each other saying, "Right, Jesus Christ, I actually sat down for lunch with him. I could have it." You know, they just speculated. Now, obviously, doing it on TikTok and treating it in such a blasé manner, but they're only young. It's not as serious to them as it is to, you know, older people, and they're only young girls. I don't think this is a huge scandal. They speculated about which one of them might have had it, and which is normal. It's the manner in which they did it and it going public on TikTok. That's the stupidity. But listen, hands up anyone listening who wasn't stupid when they were young. Like, I mean, if this isn't the worst crime in the world, I think there's been a way too much of an overreaction to this.
Yeah, I do agree. Like, and I know you agree as well, that it's so stupid. Like, we were talking about like what we would do in the office. Like, I wouldn't be licking your face anyway, not every day in the office. You know, so obviously what they're doing there is just incredibly stupid. But like, that's what I'm saying. They have people on the team, like on the ladies team, who are frontline workers. So they had no qualms about telling them exactly how stupid and how selfish that they were. And yeah, like young people need to be told that as well. Like, and as you say, like, who hasn't made a mistake when they're young? Except we're lucky enough that we didn't have social media when we were growing up making those mistakes. And look, they know it was stupid. But now, like, it went to the extent where you had Cathal Crowe, a TD in the Dáil there, who were calling them treasonous and saying it was akin to manslaughter what they had done. Like, that was outrageous stuff. That was yesterday. So, like, it definitely has gone way too far, the reaction. They did wrong, but, like, that's just crazy stuff.
Yeah, but wait there, before I come to you, Conor, just one more question, Conan. They didn't know that one of their friends had a positive case while they were licking their faces. They found this out after, so they were just messing on a night out, which is, if people think that young people are not messing like they used to on a night out, then they're living in cloud cuckoo land.
That's it. Like, they didn't know. Like, they got the test in hindsight, and then when they were speculating, one of them had already tested positive then at that stage.
Yeah.
Like, oh god, well now I'm in trouble because she licked my face. It sounds ridiculous, but then the rumors started spreading, and it was like, somebody called it a COVID party, where it was, I think that TD actually called it a COVID party, where they were deliberately trying to spread it, and people had talked that they had been spreading rumors that they had done it in restaurants on purpose and stuff. It's just stupid stuff. Like,
oh my god, I don't know, Conor, what's your take on this? Young girls don't take COVID too seriously. It's not quite the headline, shocking headline to me.
You've summed it up really well there. I was just going to butt in there to say, and Conan got in there first to say that, like, this is the mistake they made was to think that putting a video out like TikTok wouldn't get out. I suppose, like, as soon as they put that on TikTok, there was every chance it was going to spread around and people get tick about it. But like, Jesus, catch yourself on when you're coming to the extent of the reaction. For a TD like that, to mention that in the Dáil, to call it tantamount to treason and to mention the word manslaughter for something like that, Jesus Christ. I was only glad that somebody, his name escapes me, the Labour TD, there was a Labour response to it, and he started off, if you're saying something in the Dáil that says, and you're starting off saying, I saw a video on TikTok, well, then we're in trouble. So he mounted a very good defense of it. It was
Duncan Smith, I think it was.
Well, so it was a very good response. You've summed it up there. Just young girls being stupid. They know the consequences. The clubs have been shut down. I'd say they're feeling bad enough about that. Never mind, you know, having seen a TD saying stuff like that in the Dáil. So listen, they're stupid. They'll learn from it. But like, Jesus, like, calm down with the reaction.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. Hello, lads. So we're supposed to find out this evening if they're going to be back into the Longford Championships. It's gone to the DRA. And I just got a text there not long ago saying that that's been postponed until tomorrow. Unless that text was sent yesterday and I only received it today. So it's either tonight, it's either this evening or it's tomorrow. Like, I mean, this has really you know, created an awful lot of controversy in Longford. Like, I mean, it seems like a very, we don't want to go back over what we've said about this. 48 weeks is crazy. And I got some information that the mediation that we were wondering about with Pádraig Duffy, that mediation was in relation to the 48 weeks. So Killoe thought it was too much, and Pádraig Duffy was trying to see what would be agreeable from both sides. So we're at a situation now where it's gone to the DRA. Mickey Quinn was talking on Off the Ball during the week, and he's talking about saying we're a traditional Irish GAA club, two pubs, a church and a GAA pitch in our community. So you can only imagine how important a GAA is for the likes of Killoe at this time, especially the way things have been going over the last couple of or number of months. At the moment, we have five referees. They're members of the club. They're not allowed to officiate any games. And I thought he was kind of hinting that the county fellas wouldn't be able to play county either. I think they probably wouldn't. Now, I heard this is only adult teams that are banned from playing, so it's not the juvenile teams. But like, I mean, Mickey Quinn, county players not playing with the county. Longford have really shot themselves in the foot here, Connor. There's no doubt about this. It's a total mess. It's a total shit show, and it's their own doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I was just trying to think, like, is there a precedent for a club getting a ban of this nature? And I can't think of anything. And from the face of it, Woody, like, I just think that something is not right here. Surely there has to be something at play here that goes beyond the failure to pay a £750 fine, which has since been paid back. The extent of this ban seems ridiculous. And I was listening to Mickey Quinn and what he was saying, and he kind of said, like, He takes the point that, like, if you're looking on this from the outside, it seems like there's more to it. But he said that The more you read into it, the decision actually beggars belief. He said that himself. And like, from the facts available, I can't get my head around it. I know Mickey Quinn is a vested interest, but until I hear more about the other side of it and the extent of the ban and why they've been banned for that long, that's how it seems to me on the face of it. And I just feel so sorry for Mickey, for everybody involved in the club who's suffering because of this.
Yeah, you would hope it would be overturned. And apparently, from the information I got, the ban, I was also inquiring about whether there was some personal issues, you know, between the management of the club and the county board management, because it does look like there's something toxic at play here and it doesn't seem right. The ban is up to 48 weeks. Like, they could have banned them for a month, for 2 weeks if they wanted. They gave them the full 48 weeks. Like, I mean, this is what I just don't understand, because first I was told, well, their hands were tied by the rule book. And I was like, so what does the rule book say? It says up to 48 weeks. Well, they didn't have to give them 48 weeks. Like, I mean, Conor, like, this is outrageous.
It does seem, I didn't know it was up to 48 weeks. Like, that is, what else can we do but give you the full extent of the law? Like, if I hit a referee tomorrow, like, I'm looking at up to 48 weeks, and like, how often does that get halved? I just can't get how a whole club or like all the adult teams are getting the exact same punishment as one player would get for hitting a referee. And this is what, a €750 fine that wasn't paid? I mean, like, surely it didn't have to come to this. Like, double the fine, or like, you have a bit of squabble about the fine, but banning all the teams from playing football, especially, as Mickey Quinn says, this year of all years as well, like, 48 weeks not playing football is just harsh.
Yeah, exactly. So keep your eye out for that ruling tonight or tomorrow night, depending on whether the text message was sent today or the text message was pending and it was sent yesterday. Yeah, I hope that's clear as bloody mud. So Joe Brawley is not having a good time of it. He's been embroiled in a bitter feud with Declan McBennett from RTE. And now his own county has turned against him, it looks like. His own county board have turned against him. So Derry GAA released a statement during the week, and it said, strongly worded, I would say, Derry GAA would like to dismiss recent media reports which claimed the county board is in an unhealthy financial position. The simple facts are, Derry GAA is on an extremely solid financial footing. We are not in debt. And then they also refuted the claims that were made by Brawley that they're considering not fielding a team in next year's football championship. And Stephen Barker said, the suggestion that Derry GAA even discussed that is completely farcical and has no credibility whatsoever. Now, here's that word credibility popping up in relation to Joe Brawley again. Like, I mean, Jesus, talking about kicking a man when he's down. So maybe this is Declan McBennett. Credibility. What are the other ones?
Informed opinion.
Yeah, and ability to articulate that opinion. So we're calling Brawley's credibility has been called in by his own county board chairman here, Conor.
Yeah, like it's definitely an interesting one, and I can see where Brawley's piece is coming from. It was a very interesting piece at the time. Like, this goes back to 2018 when was it the AGM, you call it? Like, Derry failed to appoint a treasurer. Like, nobody stepped forward for that in 2018. So their old treasurer, Michael Hassan, who had done it for 5 years at another stage, he stepped in just to sort of save them. But then in May of 2019, he stepped down, and I think it was described as like an impossible role, just with all these growing spending demands, and there was a lot of reports at the time of financial difficulties. So it's not unfounded. Like, Brawley's not on his own. I remember a piece in the Irish News about this as well, and that had said something. I think it was by the end of 2018, like, Derry's cash reserves were just over $3,500. You know, so like, that's after all the net spend and taking away money. And like, that's not a lot of money. And then, like, so I can sort of see where Brawley's coming from, though. I don't know if he's speculating or not. I don't know what his credibility is like. But if he's talking about them not playing next year, and if you're looking at reserves on a good year of $3,500, like, how do you play next year if you're not making all that money? Like, there was a report that said that their outgoings were like $65,000 to $70,000 a month, which is a lot of money. So you have to try and make that back somehow. And it's harder in a place like Derry.
Yeah, well, the County Board Treasurer, Martin Devlin, said at the end of this financial year, Derry GEA will have capital assets valued over £6 million with no outstanding debt. But then, funnily enough, further down in the statement, it says that Derry have secured an additional facility of up to £300,000 if required, in line with our strategic plan. That's Stephen Barker saying that. He says, at this time, with the current interest rates due to COVID-19, this just makes solid business sense. Like, I mean, to say they're debt-free, then to say they've borrowed $300,000, there's probably, the way I look at it here, Connor, is that, you know, Brawley probably touched on something. As per usual with Joe, he didn't have his facts completely right. It was an embarrassing article for Derry GEA. They've come out defending themselves. You know, they're saying they have no debt, but they've $300,000 debt. And I think the truth might lie somewhere in between these two versions.
Yeah, probably. And you have to think that, remember we were talking a few weeks ago, I think it was on the back of, it might have been on the back of what the Westmead chairman was saying or something like that about their ability, you know, how COVID is going to affect their ability to operate going forward between trying to fund a county team and all that sort of stuff. So like, when you read what Joe had to say, even though you had to take into account, you know, you had to take with a pinch of salt that it was Joe Brawley that was writing it, it sounded like a situation that wasn't, you know, far removed from reality, especially when you consider the details that Conan has given just there about Derry's cash reserve. So, but then when I read it, to be honest with you, like, you know, the figures that are mentioned to me, like 300, I don't want to say the €300,000 doesn't sound like a lot of money. But like that, like I'm thinking Mayo, for example. I'm thinking the amount of time that Mayo tried to pay back the debt for Mikhail Park, for example, and the figures seem a lot less in comparison to some of the other county boards. And then when you hear what the treasurer had to say about, I think he said they've planned for their loan repayments over the next few months, and saying that they've, you know, saying that they're a very solid financial footing. So I was prepared to take what they say like at face value, and to say that they do seem to have their house in order compared to other counties, to be honest. But like, while Joe might have kind of stretched the bounds of what he was talking about, I doubt he was, there must have been something there. There must be, like, he didn't just, like, you know, come out of it. He didn't just create it out of thin air. So, yeah. But like, if I was, like, if I'd be leaning on the side of what the Derry chairman and the treasurer have said, because they seem to have the facts to back up what they're saying as well.
Yeah, no, Dev, well, Joe has got some, Kieran McKeever, obviously a friend of his, is in on the county board as well. The one that will hurt Joe the most, which I think maybe he probably stretched it out a little bit, there's obviously some truth in the 300,000, but the idea that they're not going to enter a team in the championship next year, for the Derry chairman to say that is completely farcical and has no credibility whatsoever, that's a fair old burn for Joe. But we'll move on from that one, Les, because David Goff is back. He saw the success of the cool camps and realised that if children don't get it at the cool camps, I'm perfectly safe to continue on refereeing. Doesn't seem like a logical conclusion to come to. It's great to have him back. He's the best referee in the game. He's finally saw sense and came back. He's really upped his social media game. I'm calling him Goffy from now on. Ask Goffy has been trending or has been doing the rounds on Twitter, where he's answering. I think this is fantastic from a referee, by the way. Referees don't put themselves out in the media. You never hear from them. David Goff is no problem going on social media, answering a few queries. So he's answering loads of different rule technical issues that supporters might have. And he's replying with the relevant screenshots from the rule book and his interpretation of them. Conan, like, this is a brilliant service to have. I was reading down through these, genuinely interested in what was going on.
It's class. I remember just a couple of months ago, I did a video of him, and I just wanted to pick his brain about things that I think referees give you fouled for, which they shouldn't. And he was brilliant in that. And like the amount of people who didn't know, like, so one of them was like the hand pass. And I didn't actually know this. He brought it different. I was talking about the hurling hand pass, you know, you throw it up in one hand. Obviously allowed to do that. But he said, if you have the ball in one hand and you're striking it from above, you know, some people push it from above, like, you know, they don't go underneath the ball.
Yeah.
He said, if your fist isn't closed there, that's a foul. Like, you know, it has to be closed when you're striking it from above your hand, right. Which, you know, which was just really interesting. The other one was, if you drop the ball and fall over, you're allowed to bat it on the ground and you can score a goal. So he has all these insights that it's definitely very important that a lot of players know, and a lot of referees, obviously, as well. And like, this is a good service, more power to him.
It was. And like, I mean, I was just looking at one which I thought was interesting. And he was asked about hand passing over a player's head and running around and catching it on the other side. And he said the rule says that it's only a foul if the player plays the ball up with the hand and catches it again before it touches the ground and or goalpost or whatever, comes back off the goalpost. But then I was thinking, like, what an underused move that is. Why don't we see more of this? You're thinking immediately of Mick Fitzsimons in the All-Ireland final last year. He did it. I'm not sure what Kerry player he did it to. I've done it myself, more at underage level, and you often see players at underage level doing it, like a big midfielder who wants to run the end of the field. He's almost taking the piss out of people. And like, maybe at senior level, you do that once too often and somebody bursts you or, you know, hits you on the other side. But I've had it done to me, and by the time somebody passes it over your head, the natural instinct is to look up or jump up to block it. If it goes over your head, by the time you come back down, hit the ground, realise what's after happening, your man's caught the ball, which has bounced on the other side, and he's gone a mile away, Conor. I don't know why we don't see this more often.
Well, I think it's not used more often, Willie, because I've seen it pulled. So while David Goff is clear on the rules,
really, even if it bounces, you've seen it pulled.
Yeah, I have seen it pulled, and it's the type of thing that, do you know when it gets into a ref's head, where if everybody makes enough of a noise, you know, if everyone shouts, you know, I mean, oh, that's a foul, whatever. Sometimes it can get into a ref's head if he's not 100% sure on the rules that it must be a foul and he give a foul for. Now, I haven't seen it that often, but I definitely have seen it, and I've seen it pulled wrongly, obviously, because of David Goff's interpretation, because I knew that myself. Like, I haven't tried it. I've never tried it. I wouldn't have the pace to collect it on the return. But
you don't even need pace, because your man is sold up like a kipper. Because by the time you pass him, he's in midair trying to, you know, potentially block it.
I suppose what I should have said, Willie, is I wouldn't have the brain to think of it in a tight situation like that. So, but I have seen it pulled, and I'd say that's why. And the other point you made, I think, is that it's the type of thing that, like, you know, really old school managers, when they see a fella dinking up a ball, if a manager saw somebody try that and it didn't come off, they'd nearly take the player off for trying it, for having the audacity to try it, which is the wrong thing to do. I'm just speculating over to why, as to why use more often, because it is very, I think you referenced a clip last night from Meade, and there was a clip as well of Mick Fitzsimons playing for Coola, and it was the exact situation where it can be very handy when you're over at the sideline and you've maybe one or two fellas coming in on you. You've nowhere to go, right? You know, so, but what you can do is fist it over their head, because they can't shoulder you over the line. Because
without the ball.
That's a third man tackle. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, and it was used really well by Mick Fitzsimons and the guy from Meade in that situation. So I don't know, maybe after the fact that it was publicised now in the last week, you'll see everybody tried it this weekend, and then David Goff answering a load more questions come Monday morning.
You do feel like a twit if you get it done to you, Conan. I don't know if you've been on the receiving end.
I haven't, but I see what you mean about being underused, because I'm thinking, like, I definitely should have used that more in my career, because I'm not that strong in the tackle, so I'm sort of conditioned to, you know, if I'm one-on-one with a player, I'm not often going to try and go by him. I'm going to look for a pass, whereas that's just the easiest way. Like, that was a great term you used there, sold up like a kipper. Like, that's just such a great way. Like, and you're right, if you don't have pace, if you're not that strong on the ball, what a way just to sort of have somebody flat on their heels. They can't touch you, as Conor says, and you're by them at least. Like, you might not get the whole way down the pitch, but you've got way more space and you've taken one man out of it.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see more of this hand passing it over someone's head and collecting it after the bounce. Don't try it in the winter. It's stupid in the winter. We know you never bounce a ball in the winter, lads. You never bounce a ball in the winter. I was thinking of Ask Goffey, lads. I actually had a tweet written out for the Ask Goffey, and then I went, I'm not going to go down this road. And the tweet I wrote out to Ask Goffey was, if Kevin McManaman fists the ball wide, the umpire waves it wide, but Kevin McManaman says it's a 45, is it a 45? I have to say, I thought it was an absolute classic, and then I said, I'll leave him alone. I'm not going to get into that. Talking about that, or that was them playing against Kerry. Talking about Kerry, their chairman, Tim Murphy, has been talking about increasing the amount of clubs in the championship. Because again, this year, like we mentioned on Monday, Dr. Crokes are the only club that are in the semi-finals. The other three are area clubs. So there's only 8 senior clubs and there's 8 area clubs in the Kerry Championship. And that's all fine as long as the area clubs don't get too strong. So if they were to maybe increase the senior teams from 8 to 12, for example, they're pulling 4 current intermediate teams away from those area clubs, Conan, which makes sense. It takes a little bit of the strength away from them and maybe rebalances it a bit, because realistically the area teams shouldn't be really dominating the whole time. It's a great idea and I really like it. I think a lot of counties should do it. It gives junior players and intermediate players from all over the county a chance to play in the senior championship. It's brilliant, but at the same time you want the clubs, you know, to be maybe 3 and 1 towards the clubs rather than the area teams, ideally, yeah. I suppose.
I can't believe more counties don't do it. Like, I'm sure Mayo, Leash and Derry all represented here, and they probably had a conversation in each county talking about, geez, you see what they do down in Kerry? That's class. Like, yeah. It's weird.
It took me a long time to figure out what they were doing, but now that I know what they're doing, it's great.
It was done in Mayo, Conan, years ago.
Was it?
Yeah, in the very early, when I first started playing championship, it used to be done, the early 2000s. So but it was only junior clubs. So they didn't extend to intermediate. But that's going back to 2002, 2003, and hasn't been done since.
Right, well, that's not a bad idea either. Like, an intermediate championship has prestige enough. It's not far off senior. You're winning that, you're going up senior anyway. It gives the junior clubs a chance maybe to play in the senior championship. There's definitely, there's some sort of wiggle room anyways, but I think the idea that the area teams are dominating when they're not actually clubs, do you know? Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't think that's probably the way they envisaged it when they started doing it. Go on.
Just another point on that, Willie, that I meant to add is that, like, when it comes to provincial as well, now senior is different because obviously the strongest clubs are there for senior, and divisional clubs can't go on to compete in provincial championships. But I know that, like, obviously, listen, the quality of clubs coming out from Kerry is brilliant anyway. But when you're limited to 8 senior clubs, right, then your intermediate clubs are stronger. Your junior clubs are stronger as well. And that, like, it's one of the reasons, it's another reason possibly why Kerry clubs have tended to dominate in All-Ireland club competitions as well at intermediate and junior over the years too.
Oh yeah, no, that's definitely the case. I remember us talking about that before, and Kilkenny as well, because they have so few senior teams. It definitely has something to do with it. Loughmore Castellini are playing this weekend, and it's their 8th weekend in a row. And they're like they're unique, I suppose, in Tipperary in that they have loads of dual players playing for them, including the McGrath brothers. So they're playing Nina Rogue this weekend in the senior championship final. And then the following Saturday, they're playing Moyle Rovers in the semi-final of the football. So that'll be 10 weekends in a row. So they're the complete opposite. They're the week on, week off example. Noel McGrath was talking about it, and he's kind of saying, this is fantastic, we have a game every week. A little bit like my understanding of it is, I have to correct another mistake that I made on Monday. Shell Maliers are not out of the championship like I thought they were. They play Matty Ford's club, Kyle and Aaron, in a group game. There's groups of 3, so you have another chance. So I suppose if they win that one, they have a chance of going on. They're not out, like I said. I got, do you know what I did when I saw that result, lads? And I was stupid because I knew it. We did a show not so long ago about saying at least they have a second chance in Wexford. I was so obsessed with being right about about being right. Because I was saying they couldn't be right now after winning that championship. And look, now they're out without even thinking. And so I definitely got that Shell Maliers one wrong. They're still in the championship, but I'm still right. Will we agree on that, Conan?
I think you sold yourself up like a kipper here, will we?
Okay, well, I'll put in that Lochmore one just to get the Shell Maliers correction in, because Noel McGrath, to be fair to him, I love him as a player. He doesn't have the most interesting quotes in the world when you read them. Pierce Hanley, Conor. So he's 31 years old. He is retired. He's kind of been riddled with injuries the last few years since he's gone to these Gold Coast Suns. So, like, I mean, he's made 169 appearances. Only Jim Steins, Ty Kennelly and Zach Toohey have made more. I didn't realise John O'Matney, he actually played for Mayo. I thought this, he was snapped up when he was 18, recruited at 18, and still had time to play in 2007 after he did the leave insert. He played a qualifier against Cavan.
He played a qualifier against Cavan, Willie, and he played a qualifier against Derry up in Celtic Park that I went up to, I remember. Mayo got absolutely hammered.
Where did he play? What position did he play?
Centre forward.
Centre forward, jeez.
Centre forward in both games. So he was only 18. And to be honest, at that stage, I think we knew the writing was on the wall that he was on his way to Australia anyway. So it was kind of see Pierce while we can, basically. But we probably didn't figure at that stage that he was going to go on to do so well in the AFL, because I was even just looking back there. I think he was only the 10th ever player to make the move. And as you said there, he's only behind Jim Steins, Ty Kennelly and Zach Toohey. And we were paying tribute to Zach Toohey there a couple of weeks ago. And we were saying that, like, you were saying how Zach is so durable, you know, like he's just an athlete and he rarely gets injured and stuff like that. And despite, like, Pierce Hanley's been riddled, as you say, the last 4 years, and he still got up to 170, maybe 169 appearances, which is amazing. Like, consider, like, those four lads, Steins, Kennelly, Zach Toohey and Pierce Hanley, are far and away, you know, far and away ahead of everybody else, the Irish players that have gone over to the AFL and made a success of it. So, like, it's we've kind of forgotten about Pierce Hanley to a certain degree because he's been injured for the last few years. But wow, he had an absolutely fantastic career. And, like, from our point of view, we kind of, you know, the initial hope at the beginning is, I mean, he might come back either for a Ty Kennelly style year and then go again, or just, you know, maybe get fed up of Australia and come back and help Mayo. But we soon realised that he was too good for Brisbane and for that to happen. But you know, he's regularly, you know, used to be high in the Brisbane's best and fairest. I think he was always in the leadership group. I think I saw it. They were paying tribute to him at the Gold Coast for being a leader while he has been there. So listen, he's made a fantastic career for himself out there. Looks like injury has cost him, but he spent most of his adult life out there, Willie. So it looks like he's probably going to stay out there. And listen, if the Mayo dream doesn't happen, we'll wish him all the best down under.
Yeah, he's opening up a gym out there. So, like, I mean, the idea that he's coming home is a non-runner, it looks, as far as that. I saw Conor Mortimer tweeting a tribute to him, asking him if he needed any advice about the whole gym management, that he's there for him. You know, like a DM might have kind of solved that one. But isn't it another weird time to retire? Like, I mean, he's retiring mid-season. I would have, even if he is injured, I'd have seen out the rest of the season on my contract on the treatment table. Like, I mean, what's he doing?
Yeah, not everybody's like you, Willie.
Well, I am a known mercenary.
Yeah. No, I probably would have done the same, to be honest. Maybe he just wants to cut ties, just so mentally he can be in a different place and then get going with his gym, I suppose, which he probably couldn't do if he's still contracted to be there every day.
Yeah, that's probably it. But that's it. In a weird way, he was never, like, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but Ty Kennelly was very high profile. I know he won one. Zach Toohey, he's very high profile. Pierce Hanley was never really that high profile out there. Maybe that is, Conor, because we never really saw him playing enough at home, although we didn't really see Zach playing at home either. I don't know. Am I wrong, or is it just my perspective on it that he never really got talked about as much at home nationally as maybe Zach or Tig or Marty Clark, for example, did?
You see, I think he did, Willie. It was probably around 2013, 2014. So that's 6-7 years ago. So he's about 5 years out in Australia at that stage. And at that stage, he was one of the, he was probably one of the best Irish players out there, if not the best at that time, around 2013, 2014. And I know there was a lot of talk about him at the time, because that's when Mayo were in, you know, were starting to make All-Ireland finals. And regardless of what the fact that it was never going to happen,
there was always speculation about whether Piers Handley could be the missing link. You know, the, could he come home and finally, you know, help Mayo get across the line? But
now, Conor, yeah. I have to pull you up here. Speculation in a pub in Kilshima is not national speculation.
Okay, so let's say it went to the pubs in Mayo and maybe local media in Mayo. So I'll go that far. But, okay. But no, like I said, it's because the last few years has been injured. We haven't heard as much of him as we have Canelli. And I think we're kind of missing out on, you know, we often get clips of maybe Conor McKenna and Conor Glass and Zach Tui and what they're doing on social media, which wouldn't have been as prominent, let's say, in 2013, 2014 when he was doing his thing. But I think at the height of his career, he mightn't have been as high profile as maybe Zach Tui or Ty Canelli, but he wasn't far off either.
Yeah, not too bad. I was trying to get him on the show before, but it's very awkward getting these Australian fellas because of the time difference and everything. But we'll try and get him on it on the show in the next few weeks. We spoke about Dan Patrick, Conan, earlier on on Monday, and how they've been thrown out of the championship. And County Board Chairman Jack Devaney has been talking about this. He says, it's unfortunate on Dan Patrick. It's not their fault, and it's nobody's fault, really. As it stands, they wouldn't be out of self-isolation until sometime next week. Now, Dan Patrick, PRO, Collie Quinn, he completely doesn't accept that. He said there was a clear line of action available to the county board that would have avoided our expulsion. As per public health guidelines, all our players were tested over the course of last weekend and will be again over the course of this weekend. Pending a favourable outcome to these tests, we would have been free to play the fixture with Kerry Duff on Tuesday, the 8th of September. Unfortunately, the county board opted not to consider this course of action. So it seems, and now they're in a relegation playoff. And to make this matters even more complicated, Kerry Duff, who they were supposed to play, have since won their quarterfinal against Brinesford, and so they're now into the quarterfinal. So if Down Patrick want to contest this, which they do, it's going to get very messy because the team they were supposed to play have already got on a route, Colin.
Yeah, so I think they're playing Brinesford in the quarterfinal. I think I'm right in saying Kerry Duff, but
they beat Longstone. Yeah, they're playing Brinesford in the quarterfinal. Thanks.
But it's really annoying for Downpatrick as well, because they were free to play the first game of Kerry Duff, which got called off at Kerry Duff's request.
The first two games,
Like, that's especially, like, really sore. I still see where the county board are coming from a little bit, but I think this stuff should have been made way more clear at the start of the championship. Just like, you know, if anybody has a case of COVID, we can't stop the championship, you know, and just everybody agree to this and we'll move on, like, you know, with that in mind. But seems like that didn't happen, and people are looking for, you know, not special requests, but their own individual requests. And I can see why Downpatrick want to do that, but I don't know. It's such a mess, and I think this is why relegation definitely shouldn't be a thing in championship this year. I think promotion still should be allowed, but like relegation, you don't know why a team are missing games, and like in this case, we do know it's because of a COVID-19 outbreak. You know, so with the fact that the team are now in danger of being relegated because of that, it just seems very unfair. And that's
on the table. I think for me, no team should be thrown out. In the spirit of the year we're after having, the teams are back from the lockdown, they're training really hard, and because of 3 or 4 days, I don't think any team should go out of it. I think the county team, instead of the 14th of September to have everybody, maybe make it the 17th. You know what I mean? Just don't throw out a club unless it gets to a stage where it's a farce and it's a week delay, which we can't stand over. But Down Patrick are saying it's not a week delay. You know, they could line out on Tuesday, all going well. I don't know, Conor. I would give them until the Tuesday, leave them stay in the championship. And, you know, because let's be honest, the next round, although they seem to be playing it off very quick if the match after had been played already since this was meant to be played.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, but it just said the whole thing strikes as just really, really unfair, especially as you said there, where they would have been in a position to play the game, you know, the first two occasions, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, you know, you'd like to think that the spirit of the rule as opposed to the rule would actually come into play, but like, it doesn't look like this, it's going to happen. And like I know they're not going to let it rest. I just don't know how this is going to be resolved to Dan Patrick's satisfaction, to be honest, which is a pity because they didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And I think that even a bit of advice for Dan Patrick is, yes, you've been very hard done by. Like, what are you going to gain from, you know, appealing this, and then you just mess up the Down Championship? And, you know, like, I mean, that's too messy. I feel very bad for them, and they've been harshly done. But if they're going to kind of start appealing and, you know, the whole Down Championship is postponed and doesn't get played. I don't think that's really a great solution to the whole thing either. But there's no, it's the problem here is with, I did have to laugh at the county board chairman, Jack Devaney. It's not their fault. It's not anybody's fault, really. So, like, I mean, he's making sure to say that the county board included in that. I do think it's the county board's fault that they could have given them those couple of days, considering how, you know, fair they were with the first two postponements. There's no doubt about that. I will finish up here, lads, on a good news story. So Rathdowney Earl chairman Tim Barry, like, he's had to have broken all records when he lined out. He's 72. He lined out in goals for the Junior C footballers against Annanock during the week, and he joins us on the line now. How did you get roped into this one, Tim?
Well, now, it just happened that we only had 12, and I was the 13th, and you have to have 13 to play a Junior C match.
That right. Was it. So you had no other choice. You were bullied into it.
I was bullied into it, yeah. I had no other choice.
So I heard at the start the initial plan was to stick you in corner forward and then you could just sneak off over the sideline, you know, whenever you got a chance.
Well, that was sort of the initial thought, but sure, the referee is not blind. some people say they are, but anyway, no. I went into the goal. Sure, I had very little to do. No, I had little or nothing to do. So
right, well, in front of me. You made one save, anyways.
I did. I did save it, but it hit the post and went back out, and one of their lads came in and stuck it in the back of the net. Then
right, okay. Because you don't sound like a Rathdowney man, there.
No, I'm not. I'm originally from Dublin.
Right, okay. So you're a football man.
Well, no, it's hurling. I'm always interested in, not football really.
Right, so
I followed the football. I followed the football a bit, but not like hurling.
Right. Were you sore the next day?
No, I wasn't. No, I wasn't sore. I had nothing to do, sir. All I did was stand there between the sticks, and that was it.
Yeah, well, I hope you did your recovery session now and everything the day after.
I did all that. I'm out playing around the golf there today, so I'm all right.
Jeez, you're absolutely flying it. Well, listen, it's after going nationwide anyway. 72 years of age. Surely it's a record that'll never be beaten.
I don't know about that. people are getting fitter all the time.
two other things I want to ask you. I believe you took a phone call during the match, which is very unprofessional.
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, my wife rang me during the match. Yeah.
And you took the call?
I took the call, I did. I didn't tell her I was in the goal, though.
And I heard another little birdie told me was that there was a water break after 15 minutes and you were heading up for it and the referee told you to get back in the goals because you wouldn't make it back down in time for the game to start. Is there any truth to that?
He did, the fecker, he did. He told me there. He's a nice fella. Brendan McCann is his name. Yeah, a nice fella.
Right. What did you do for kickouts?
Oh, I had a full back kick them out.
Okay, so that's not too bad.
Yeah.
Did you do any organising of the defence, or were you vocal? What was your communication like?
No, I left a few shouts out, all right, but not very much.
So not are you hoping to retain your place for the next day, or are you retired again?
I don't think I'll be fighting for my place.
I don't think I'll fight for my place. No, well, listen, you can still be part of the panel if they win it, and you have a good team. You're going out to win that. Might get a medal at the end of it, right?
Oh, nice, yeah.
Well, listen, Tim, I know you're playing golf for the day. Come here, we let you go, and thanks very much for taking the time.
No matter. Thanks very much.
Brilliant stuff from Tim there. 72, it's not bad going. I don't think that'll ever be beaten. So we'll be back in part two, and we'll look ahead to the games at the weekend. Happiness hit her like a train on a train.
I don't really know Jim anymore. Me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Run for your children, for your sisters and brothers. Leave all your love.
All right, so lads, the game's on TV this weekend. We've no Friday night game. Am I right in that? I am known to get this one wrong. There's nothing been advertised anyway, so I didn't see anything for Friday night. On Saturday night, RTE are in Tyrone. So they're coming with a double header of Tyrone semi-finals. And the Tyrone Championship's been pretty good. Cole Island played Trillick. Cole Island, a very good team to watch. And we know all about Trillick's players. And they are the 2018 and the 2019 champions. Trillick, obviously, the defending champions. So definitely, this is definitely worth watching. We have two great matchups in this one because we've Pádraig Hamsey and we've Michael McKiernan, two intercounty defenders on Cole Island side, and we have Matty Donnelly and Lee Brennan, two intercounty forwards on this side. So if this isn't Pádraig Hamsey picking up Matty Donnelly, Michael McKiernan picking up Lee Brennan, well then I don't know what I'm talking about, Conan.
No, that's what I would be going with anyway, unless you were wanting to free up Pádraig Hamsey from a Cole Island point of view, just to try and set him loose. But I think Matty Donnelly's too much of a threat to not be looking to hammer that hammer. And I think on the other side, Rory Kelly, I talked about him the last day, a fullback for Trillick's a really good defender, and him and Ronan O'Neill might be a really tasty battle as well. It's a great game.
Right, definitely it is a good game. Two evenly matched teams. I don't know what it is about Tyrone football, but they're always evenly matched teams. In the other one then, we have Dungannon against Errigal Kieran. I'm surprised that the first one isn't second and the second one first. Although Dungannon are kind of up-and-coming team. They haven't won it since 1956. But Dungannon's the biggest town in Tyrone. So, like, I mean, it's bigger than Oma. So, like, they've been underachieving pretty much. They're big, or they're very young. They're very fit, very strong. Pádraig McNulty, big midfielder, plays with them. They also have Paul Donaghy. Mm-hmm. He kicked 14 points off Michael Cassidy. We know Michael Cassidy, wing forward for Tyrone seniors. I think 7 of that 14 were from play. They transferred him from Eden Dork. I didn't hear about this transfer, Conan. Maybe you did. Eden Dork are just outside Dungannon town, so they're massive rivals. Dungannon have poached their best forward, and he kicked 14 points, and now they're in a semi-final. So I wouldn't say this news has gone down too well in Eden Dork.
No, it's a big loss. Like, I'm not sure exactly the details why he ended up transferring, but like, he's just shit hot at club level. And talked about him scoring 14 points. Like, even the ones that weren't from play, like, he was kicking over 45. So he was putting like 40 meter frees on the ground and clipping them over. He was hitting them from like different angles, different ranges. He's a really top quality corner forward. Like, and like, they took a big scalp there the last day against Ardbo, who are just perennially usually in the semi-finals. So that would give him a lot of confidence. They did it after extra time as well. I don't know, like, I can definitely see I would have gone with the other game second, but this just might be a sort of sneaky classic between Errigal Kieran and Dungannon, so it's a one to look forward to.
Yeah, and it's been a much higher scoring championship than usual, but watch out for Paul Donaghy. I'm not sure I'm too impressed. It's all right. Listen, you can accuse me of going to Parnell's all you want, but transferring to a team down the road, not too sure about that. Let's see, kind of stick. At least they're not playing Eden Dork anyways. Paul Donaghy might need a Garda escort or something like that. Then on Sunday, we have, and the great thing about Sunday, lads, on TG Cahir is there's no deferred games. So we're seeing two live games. It makes a huge difference to me, lads. I don't care what game it is. Once it's live, I'll have an interest in watching it. If it's not live, the curiosity is killing me. I've checked the result. If it's a low scoring game, I'm not going to watch it. And if it's a great high scoring game, I know the result. There's no suspense. If I know one team's won and the other team are well ahead, I know this comeback is coming and I'm ready for it. And I don't know, Connor, it's just to have two live games and two good ones, in fairness, Clara versus Ballyhale Shamrocks and Roscommon semi-final, Clonnagale versus Pádraig Pearses.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think it was fine to, like, you know, record a game and then watch it later before Twitter. But like, the temptation just to check, especially when you've planned out your Sunday, the temptation to check, you know, what the score was in the game is just too much. But the second game in particular, looking forward to, because it's close enough to here down in Mayo, but it's a repeat of the Roscommon final from last year as well. So. And that was Pearse has won it, but I remember it got a little bit hairy for them in the end. And I think it was the first county title they'd ever won it in 8 or 9 attempts or something like that. So they've got their monkey off their back, but they're playing Bridget's has obviously been the powerhouse in Roscommon the last few years, but traditionally Clonagale are the big team. So there's a certain kind of confidence that'll come with that too. And some good, there's like Roscommon players on both sides. You've got the Shines for Clonagill, Alton Harney, and then you have the Dailies and Hubert Darcy. I think Conan is a big fan for Pierce's as well. So yeah, a good job that it's live as well. So like, I think it might clash with Knockmore and Ballina, which is the Mayo semi-final on Sunday as well. But we'll be able to tune into one on the laptop and one on TV. So looking forward to that.
Jesus, Conan, I forgot Hubert Darcy. Jesus, like, I mean, this is just put up. Make yourself a cup of tea and sit down and watch this man at full forward. Guaranteed. What's his guaranteed score? 1-2. Is that what he's usually guaranteed to get?
I think it's guaranteed 1-1. But like, we'll go with 1-2. Just like talk about somebody who loves getting out on a Sunday and just ramrodding people off the pitch. Just it's just a joy to watch. Just nobody I like better when I'm sitting on my arse with a cup of tea, as you say, not having to work hard or do anything. Just watch somebody else do it all for you.
Yeah, exactly. They're Kildare back in action, lads. We know that restriction was just randomly lifted, you know, mid-term during the week. So they're absolutely delighted. They're trying to immediately get their games underway. I think it was Monday night that was lifted, and it wasn't supposed to be until the 6th of September, something along those lines. A bit like the Laois and Offaly one, just these lads just making it up as they go along, as far as I'm concerned. Sometimes I think these people, because they're medical experts, get more credit than they deserve, that they're just because they're medical experts, people put trust in them. Whereas, like you say, in you drive from Monaghan to Armagh, and there's a whole other set of health experts, and everybody has to put their trust in them and have a completely different opinion. And then you get a flight to Sweden and you have a whole lot of other medical experts and you have to put your complete trust in them, and they've got a completely different idea. Like, I mean, it's almost like religion. You're believing in different things and they're all kind of contradictory. I don't know what to make of it. But like, I mean, again, I go back to it. Nefet, I've lost all faith in them. Anyways, back to GEA. Kildare back in the game. Johnny Doyle was talking, saying there's certainly a lot of pressure, particularly on dual clubs. If you pick up an injury or two, your season could be over, and that's fair enough. I don't think dual is a huge concern in Kildare, because they've a full round of hurling on Friday night and then they've a full round of football on Saturday. But there is no doubt, Conan, that this Kildare Championship, they've lost a lot of time now, and they're definitely up against it to get both run off. Again, I'm not sure dual is a huge issue.
No, I'm just glad. I thought you were going to throw that Nefet question over to me there.
I just like to get these things off my chest.
Yeah, I was just terrified. It was going to be, what do you think of that, Conan? And I was like backing away from the microphone. But yeah, like it is, it's going to be a squash. Like, again, maybe a lot of people were expecting this. I sort of, to be honest, expected this in more counties. And going into the club championship, I thought there would be a lot of counties that didn't finish their championship. So this is the one that's most at risk. And if they can squash it all in, then I think it's a great victory for everybody in the GA. Just even if it's a bit of a mess, the fact that every county championship would get played, I think, is something I didn't see a few weeks back.
Yeah, no, definitely not. There's some other games to look out for. In Laois, we have a few good games. Strably take on St. Joseph's, two of the traditionally big teams in Laois, and that's a knockout because both of those teams lost their first round games. Huge game in the second round. This is not knockout because both teams won their first games. Port Laois against Port Harlington. Port Harlington should have beaten Port Laois last year in the semi-final, and if it wasn't for Bruno McCormack coming on and saving Port Laois, they would have been in big trouble. And we have the Celtic versus Rangers. Arlis Killeen versus Arlis Kilcruise. So I think about 10 years ago, this would have been absolute bloodshed at this game. But I think both teams have kind of slipped down the pecking order a little bit. Locally, there's still a lot of dislike there. So it's just interesting whenever those two teams, these are two clubs that they're just literally down the road from each other, and they've like dug up each other's goalposts, or Arlis Kilcruise wake up one morning and their goalposts have been dug up. This is how bad the hatred has gone on in those two clubs. But it's all calmed down, and it has to be said, not amongst the two sets of players, more against the older people in the clubs, because the younger players were actually open to potentially joining up. And if they had joined up maybe 10 years ago, they would have been well able to beat Port Laois, and there would have been some brilliant county finals instead of the kind of messy domination that Port Laois had. So I was actually disappointed. I would like to have seen them joining up back in the day, and you'd win one, you'd lose one, you know, but there would have been a much bigger buzz around the Laois Championship because you would have had a proper rival, which we didn't have for too long. Like we mentioned, the Tipperary match, Loughmore Castellani versus Nina Aroge. We have the other semi-final in that is Drummond Inch versus Killadangan, who lost the semi-final last year, and Monaghan GAA TV. We haven't talked too much about the Monaghan Championship outside of Clontibret. Scotstown face Carrick Macross, and Ballybay Pierce's take on Inneskeen. That's Oisín McConville's club, as we know. And you would fancy Scotstown and Ballybay to both win that one and face off in the final. So there's loads of options. You'll be watching Knockmore Ballina, Connor, you reckon? Or it definitely clashes with that Roscommon match. I'm interested in the Knockmore Ballina match myself.
Yeah, but the other one, Willie, is Braithwaite against Westport on Saturday evening, and that's on Mayo GAA TV as well. So that's going to be the...
What time is that?
That's at 7:30, quarter past or 7:30. I'll have to double check that, but on Saturday evening in McHale Park. So that's going to be the much anticipated rematch of Lee Keegan against Aidan O'Shea. So they marked each other in the they played each other in the group. I think Westport won by a point, but the two lads marked each other, and by all accounts it was a battle of savers. So they'll probably be going up against each other again. And then Ballina Knockmore is at 4:00, quarter to 4 or 4:00 on Sunday as well. It'd be remiss of me, Willie, to not to mention that my own club is playing an semi-final as a curtain raiser to the Braithwaite Westport game. We're playing against Hollymount Carrickmacross on Saturday evening as well, which is also on Mayo GAA TV. So if you haven't watched enough GAA this weekend, maybe give that a look.
Are you playing?
Hopefully.
Right. It'd be nice for someone on this show to be actually playing with their club.
We're shut down.
That's the plan. If we don't go too badly, I'll update you all on Monday.
Actually, before you come in there, Conan, what's the production like on that Mayo Fan TV? Like, the Dublin one was pretty high. You had Oisín Langan and you had Coleman Goggins doing commentary. Now, like I said, the camera just follows the play. Like, obviously they wouldn't have RT or Sky's level amount of cameras, but like, it's well watchable. It's not perfect. Do you have full commentary teams, and do you have more than one camera, or how does Mayo TV work it?
Yeah, well, it's, to be honest, well, it's probably not the best time to ask, because at the weekend the transmission went for about 20 minutes. It was actually during our quarterfinal against Cross and Liner. So Mayo GAA TV had to issue an explanation and a refund for anyone who had had paid for that game. But bar a few teething issues, and there have been a few, I can say there haven't been a few complaints about their coverage this year. I get it most weekends, and like, it is a one camera setup, but it's easy to follow, as you say. It's not RT or it's not Sky, but it's definitely very watchable. And in terms of the commentary, they have Mike Finnerty on the biggest games, who's obviously one of the best in the business. He's been doing Sky Sports for years. Also have Liam Horan, who people would know, like, he used to be a GAA correspondent for the Irish Independent, would be very well known. And Michael D. McAndrew, who's on Midwest and has delivered some famous commentary on Mayo games over the years as well. So like, the commentary teams they have are top class. They have like the likes of John Mahon, Martin Carney, who would have both been national analysts as well in recent years, and fellow from my own club, Tomás Morley, who is the current Mayo under 17 manager as well. Declan Riley, who was in charge of Castlebar when they were at their best in reaching All-Ireland Club Finals. So like, for the most part, bar a few teething difficulties, and there have been, like I said, I can't go without mentioning them, but it's definitely well watchable.
Yeah, no, it's like, I was kind of giving out, just, I was almost messing on Twitter about media having a free pass and now you have to pay £7. But then again, I think about it, if I had gone up to Parnell Park to watch Ballymun the Fina, I wouldn't have seen the hurling game. So it's fantastic now that even if the production, but you're not going to analyse games from watching it, Conan, but you can literally have your pick of any game, you know, in the country.
It's amazing. Like, and to be honest, my eyes were only really opened up when we did that stream. I think Skerries were playing Thomas Davis, and like, that's a small enough group game, and 2,000 people watched that from all over the world. Like, you know, people were tuning in who used to be part of Skerries Harps, and they're tuning in from Canada and New Zealand and wherever else. So it's such an important thing, especially for people who aren't here, and now of course for people who can't go to the games. But I couldn't let TV talk go by without mentioning Antrim, because their championship this year has been one of the best, and their service has been absolutely class, and their semi-finals are on Saturday now as well. So it's just been an unbelievable championship up there, and I think it's going to keep going that way for the next three games as it is.
Yeah, no, it was St. Gall's knocked out. It was dark with the penalty shootout. You see, it's very hard on Monday to get everything, and sometimes these fan TV doesn't kind of appear until the Monday evening, you know, the clips of it or whatever. So we missed out on that.
I think that game was Tuesday, actually, so I think we were safe enough to... Pretty sure it was Tuesday night. Yeah, in the dark, it went to extra time. St. Gall's missed a free from 13 metres out or 20 metres out maybe in the last minute to go 2 points up. And then Kieran McKenna for Port Glenone nailed this unbelievable free from about 42 metres out right beside the sideline, put it on the ground and he stroked it over. And that brought it to penalties, and the rest is history. It was folklore stuff, I think.
Yeah, no, exactly. You're exaggerating a little bit by the sideline, because I actually, you're not the only one that saw this free kick. But I'll let you off with that. Come here, listen, lads. This sounds like a conversation that we'd just be having on the phone here, rather than actually broadcasting it. So we'll leave it there, and we'll be back on Monday, and we'll have a look back at all the matches at the weekend. So we'll talk to everybody then. Good luck.
Finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.